Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. What Healthy Alternatives is about, most of us really want to reach optimum levels of health and wellness. We want to feel better, live long, and enjoy life even more, and that's what I attempt to bring you on each of the Healthy Alternative shows. My guest I'm going to be interviewing a little bit later today is Dr. Irene Cohn. She's a psychiatrist, but she's also an acupuncturist, interfaith minister, student of the Course in Miracles. She's been in medical practice for almost 30 years, and she's also just recently done a book called Soul Journey to Love, 100 Days to Inner Peace. Ah, sounds good. We're going to be talking to her in just a little bit about her book and how it can really help you reach inner peace for you. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you. A few weeks ago, I interviewed one of the people from the Yes on 37 campaign in California. That's a ballot initiative to get any products that contain GMO, genetically modified organisms in it, labeled so consumers can choose. Well, the industry, which is Monsanto and Dow and several others, they have been spending $37 million plus to attempt to defeat this initiative. Some of the earlier research showed that about 80-90% of the people in California want to know so they can choose what to buy. Well, with all this money going on out there, the pesticide campaign has been doing interesting kinds of misrepresentation. They misrepresented Stanford University 3 times. They did a misleading state voter guide. And they have bombarded the airwaves with misleading ads, and that part's according to newspaper fact checkers. What they have just recently done is they have released a campaign where they affix the official U.S. FDA seal to their campaign propaganda, and they even went so far as attributing a fabricated quote to the FDA, which said, "The U.S. Food and Drug Administration says labeling policy like Proposition 37 would be inherently misleading." And then it's signed U.S. Food and Drug Administration. So it's making it appear that the U.S. FDA has taken a position against Proposition 37. They're not allowed to do that. As a matter of fact, it is a criminal crime to do what they are doing. Fortunately, there are some folks who have now filed with the Justice Department a complaint that these people ought to be prosecuted criminally. So that may not stop them in time, though. So what can you do to help this campaign succeed so people do vote yes? If you have folks who live in California, call them up. Let them know what's going on. You want to give money, you can go to the Right to Know campaign, and you can make a donation there. If you'd like to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can go to teplitz.com and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. I do a free monthly e-newsletter called the Teplitz Report. It's health, nutrition, wellness oriented. You can locate it by going and sign up by going to teplitz.com, teplitz.com, and you'll click on the Home About button and you can sign up. Every week, I also like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough, the newest information, latest information that you can use about healthy alternatives for yourself, family, and loved ones. What I want to talk about is vitamin D. Vitamin D is becoming almost like the equivalent of how snake oil used to be, where snake oil, you could take it for all kinds of things, and except it really didn't work. Well, vitamin D is the good snake oil because it works for tons of things. And one of the latest things, it can even boost survival rates in critically ill patients in hospital intensive care units. This is from a study published in QJM, an International Journal of Medicine. And what they found is they had 130 patients over 6 months. They were over age 18, who were admitted to intensive care unit in Tel Aviv University affiliated hospital, and they required mechanical ventilation when they were admitted. So the study then looked at the vitamin D that the people had in their system. They measured it, and they also did not put into the study anybody who'd been taking vitamin D previously. Those who had 20 what's called nanograms or more of vitamin D, and while that is defined by the National Institute of Health as sufficient, I'll talk more about that in a minute, and they had those who had less than that. They found 107 of these 130 patients were actually vitamin D deficient. Here's the part that's interesting. The people who died earlier were the ones who were insufficient in vitamin D. They lived on the ventilator about 15.3 days, whereas the people who had 20 nanograms or more of D lived an average of 24.2 days. They also found that those who had more vitamin D, the disease-fighting white blood cells, they had more of them attempting to protect their system. Now, my view is when you're a 20 and a lot of other folks, you're still in vitamin D depletion in effect. You're not at optimum levels. Optimum levels are from 50 to 70 nanograms. And so that's where they ought to be looking at research, is if you get somebody up to that level, they may not even wind up having to be critically ill in the first place. So get a blood test done and find out what your level is. If you've got cancer, you want to go to 70 to 100 nanograms and take vitamin D3. Before I bring on my guest, Dr. Irene Cohn, I want to talk to you about a book I've done called Brain Gym for Business. This is a book that has these brain gym movement exercises in it, which rewire the circuitry of the brain in minutes. It has all the positions in an organization broken out by the tasks people do over the course of the day. So you're getting ready to do, say, typing, and you kind of feel a little yicko about typing. You don't like the way you're doing it. Well, you look it up and you'll find three or four brain gyms or so to do before you type, and you'll actually be rewiring your brain to switch you on to be able to type more effectively. Brain Gym for Business. You can locate it at teplitz.com. You'll see the products button and then go to books, or you can go to amazon.com and order it there. My guest today is Dr. Irene Cohn. She's a psychiatrist, but she's also an acupuncturist, interfaith minister, and student of A Course in Miracles, and she's been in medical practice for almost 30 years. After completing Voice of Love program in 2010, where she learned to clearly hear the inner voice within, which some call the higher self or Holy Spirit, Soul Journey to Love was the book that she wrote. And over the past 17 years, she has served on the Emotional Freedom Technique Advisory Board. She's given workshops in many alternative approaches, Qigong, meditation.
She's a lifelong resident of New York City, but she now lives and works in Austin, Texas. And welcome to Healthy Alternatives, Dr. Cohen.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let me ask you a question. How did you go from MD to acupuncture, meditation, interfaith minister, and all the other stuff?
A question I'm asked quite often. I actually started to meditate before I went to medical school. So I went into medical school as a meditator, and it's probably the thing that saved me through the grueling training and staying up all night for my residency training. And I was a very avid meditator for those 8 years of my medical school and residency training. It really kept me as level-headed as I could be, given how difficult that journey is. So I have always had an interest in the mind and in quieting the mind, not that I was always so able to do it myself, but I was always looking for ways to go within. And that definitely led me to psychiatry as a choice of practice. I spent a long time in practice, and then in the mid-1990s, I guess, I decided to really try to transform the practice that I was doing with patients because they weren't getting as well as I would have liked them to be.
And you're talking about doing regular medical practice with folks, right?
That's in my practice of psychiatry. So I started to look into some other avenues, which led me to relaxation techniques, Qigong, other forms of meditation. I studied acupuncture, and it just went on and on. And even though I started out trying to do this for patients, I was really doing it for myself as well, because we're always trying to take care of ourselves and understand ourselves as well as others. So that's
now, what were your colleagues' reaction? What year did you start moving into this stuff?
I started moving into this stuff in about 97 or 98. It wasn't really that acceptable.
Right. That's what I would think.
But I'm a very diligent practitioner of anything I do, including medicine. And so it was fairly well accepted where I was working, because they knew my work in general, and it wasn't as if I was proselytizing to anyone. So I worked in a hospital. I worked in a hospital where they were doing acupuncture for detox patients, for the substance abuse patients. There was a Chinese medical practitioner there, so it wasn't totally foreign. And so I guess that was a little easier for me. But I definitely felt as I was going on that I was leaving all my colleagues behind in the 20th century, and I was just into the 21st, and maybe they'd catch up and maybe they wouldn't, and it really didn't bother me so much. So I just...
Yeah, they were probably saying not the 21st century. They were saying she went over the falls.
But sometimes when you're called to do something, you just have to do it, and you don't really have much of a choice. So I just kept going, and I didn't really worry about what anybody else thought. I suggest people do that in their lives, because it turns out okay all the time.
So your book, it's Soul Journey to Love. It's like a daily devotional for meditators. How does that work?
The book is organized into 100 relatively short passages. Each passage is 1 to 2 pages long. Maybe there are a couple that are 3 pages. But for the most part, they are short readings that are meant to be read as one a day, and then either meditated on or contemplated, or go about your daily business and not even think about it. But they are really meant to bring the reader closer to the inner self. And the book's divided into 3 parts. So the first part is more processes and a little bit of exercises to do to learn how to quiet the mind and go within. and the second part of the book is a little more explanatory about the processes of the mind and the universal mind and what I've chosen to call God, but which others have called Source or the universal mind. And the third part are poems and prayers, which are also meant to be reflected upon. So the way that the book is used best is one day at a time. It doesn't really need to be done that way. One could pick up any passage, open the book to anywhere. It's harder to open the Kindle to anywhere, but one can do that too.
So in the
Kindle and the Nook version, it's laid out for the different days, so you could just click onto any day at random, and there's usually a message in there for you, whichever one you pick.
So you really created an updated version of an apple a day keeps the doctor away.
Or keeps the doctor in your hand, right?
Right, it keeps you in charge. Now,
the point is really for you to be in charge.
Yeah.
For you to really be in charge of your own thoughts and your own emotions and your own inner workings, because people spend so much time thinking without thinking about what they're really thinking about. And what I believe I'm trying to do in this book is get people to get to that much quieter place within, where they can find who they truly are. We spend a lot of time in the outer world either doing things for other people or doing things because we must do them out of obligation, either for work or others. And we don't really spend that much time by ourselves. And it doesn't really take that much time to be by oneself, but it is much easier to set aside.
So quickly, how much time does it take?
Well, I learned this from the years that I studied Qigong, that doing something for a minute a day is better than 99% of the people who don't do anything for a minute a day. So it's like building a muscle. You can do a minute, 2 minutes, 5 minutes. The Chinese medicine prescriptive is that the qi, the energy that flows through the body, takes 21 minutes to flow through. So this is why it's harder to sit more than 20 or 30 minutes at a time. So I would say the goal is about 20 minutes, but if you only have 2 minutes, it's better than no minutes.
Great. Now, do you think your book can be used to when somebody's starting meditation or somebody's fallen away from meditation and wants to kind of pick it back up again?
I do believe so, because these are, at least the first part of the book, is more guided meditation process than perhaps the second part of the book. So each process explains some part of the way that the mind might work, or the way our thoughts get away from us, and how to bring oneself back. So there are so many different ways to do that. Hopefully one of these ways will appeal to one and be able to stick with it. You can also use it if there's one particular passage that really grabs you. You could just keep going back to that over and over again. But this is meant to be a gradual deepening of going within and being quiet.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and we'll be back with my guest, Dr. Irene Cohn, in just a moment.
I'd like to talk to you about a book I have done called Switched On Selling with Dr. Tony Alessandra. Tony is a guru on sales. He has written 20 books on it. And in our book, he does the technique, and then I do the brain rewiring approach using those brain gym movement exercises to switch you on for selling. This is a research-validated experience you'll have. It's one of the first books out there that when you read it, you have that no-no in going off in your head, and you can get rid of it in minutes and switch yourself on. To find out about how you can purchase it, go to switchedonselling.com. That's switchedonselling.com.
So my guest today is Dr. Irene Cohn. She's a psychiatrist, acupuncturist, interfaith minister. She's written the book Soul Journey to Love, and she's been serving for 17 years on the Emotional Freedom Techniques Advisory Board. She gave workshops in Qigong and meditation. While she was originally from New York, she now works out of Austin, Texas. And I was thinking when I was hearing you talk, Irene, you were talking about meditation, teaching that in the book, but it also sounded like you have, I'll call it the Christianity concept of contemplation, where you're thinking about a passage and things like that as part of the book as well. Is that how you see that, or do you view those techniques as different, or getting you to the same place?
This is a really good question, Jerry, so thanks for asking it. In meditation, one doesn't really need a subject to think about. In fact, usually the point would be to not be thinking about anything, or to use some tool like a mantra or looking at a candle flame to get to a point of not thinking at all, and to really quiet down the mind and the sympathetic nervous system in the body. In contemplation, which I suppose this book of mine does really advocate in a way, although I hadn't really thought about it in this way before you asked the question, in reading a passage or reflecting on a passage or even a phrase, one can also get to that place of quiet, but one does it in a slightly different way, because in focusing on a phrase or a passage, one is using the thinking process as well as the experiential. So what I would say is it's easier to live your life as a contemplation than as a meditation. And Dr. David Hawkins, who...
I think I'll contemplate about that.
Okay. Dr. Hawkins, who just passed away, has written about this so much more eloquently than I could describe. But if you're living your life as a contemplation, then in a way you're always observing yourself. This is the way I would see it. You're being the observer of life while you're in it. And so you're in the world but not of it. So as things happen, you observe them, you watch them, you look at them, you experience them, you're watching them again, and you're letting them go until the next thing happens that catches you. And so to live your life in that state of love, of kindness, of being at one with everything or with God or with yourself or with your family, those are contemplative states that people can cultivate. And the book that I've written can bring one to that state of cultivation in the same way that I'm talking about in terms of contemplation. So I think I answered your question, but maybe you have something else you had in mind.
Well, let me go in a different direction, and that's with your having incorporated meditation into your practice. Give us a couple examples of what kind of changes you've seen in patients who are willing to get into doing meditation experiences.
Okay. Certainly, patients did come to me over the years asking to learn how to meditate, asking to learn how to quiet their minds. I would say that people who are able to develop a daily practice, not an outer practice like exercising, which is great and does a lot of things for the body and the mind, but an inner practice of any sort that they can kind of hook onto every day, can really bring people to a much more calm and centered place. So I had many patients who liked to do yoga and then meditate, or liked the meditation part of the yoga, but they liked the physical part of it. So there are ways to incorporate this into your daily life that don't mean that you have to go sit somewhere quietly away from everybody. You can do it even in the context of a class. As long as you can feel that you're reaching your own core. And that's not really that hard to do, but it, you know, some people find it hard to remember to do. So I would say that I had patients over the years who really found a much calmer place to be in general. But when storms come, you know, sometimes it goes all out the window, and it's really all right as long as you can bring yourself back to that at some point in time.
So do you have a favorite type of meditation you personally like to do? I know for me, my preference is when I do that's a mantra coupled with the breath. So is there one that you've got that you prefer?
Well, I started out doing mantra meditation for many years, like, I don't know, 12, 14 years. That's what I was doing. I do a meditation now that's more related to the Voice for Love training that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, which has to do with extending love to every thought and feeling that comes up. And so I sit there, and as the thoughts arise, I just extend love to it. As you could imagine it, as a loving mother who loves her child no matter what. So these thoughts are really just thoughts, and they don't have that much meaning except what we put on them. And in extending love to them, that doesn't mean you love those thoughts if they're horrible. It just means you're extending love to them. It really neutralizes the thought itself and allows me, at least, to really go deep into a state of peace. And that's about all that I do now. And it's very simple. I do suggest people try that. You know, sometimes it's hard to focus only on the breath. That's a really good one for people that works for. But I do find the idea of extending love, one can just do it as you're walking, just extending love to anything that one sees. Sometimes that's hard to do.
Now, the biggest reason that I hear from folks as to why they may have stopped meditating is that they can't quiet their mind. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to somebody who says that's their issue?
Well, the mind has a job, and that's to think. So we have to let the thinking happen. I mean, it's really hard to just stop it. It won't stop. It'll get worse. Haven't you found that to be the case? So I would say the mind is just doing its job, thinking. But you're not just your mind. So you can observe the thinking. You can extend love to the thinking. You can be there with the thinking, but that's not the whole of who you are. And you can just sit and watch yourself thinking. And if you can observe that, then you have moved away from being caught up in the thoughts. The less you pay attention to the thoughts and their content, the more they're going to just eventually die off because you're not paying that much attention to them. But it does take practice to do this over and over again. But to think that you're just going to be a totally blank mind even after a month of meditation, that's not the way that our thoughts work. It's not the way our egos work. It's not the way our minds work. So I would say just don't pay so much attention to it. It doesn't, they don't matter so much.
Yeah, the way I talk to people about it is when they realize they're thinking, and you can be thinking for a long time before you even realize you're thinking. You just go back to whatever technique without even getting upset about it. And that I'd kind of define it as a desensitization process. And you have that, let's say, negative thought in this very deep state physiologically of rest and relaxation, you don't have the same response to it, so you break the connection. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you find as well?
Yes. I would say so, because I'm not going to go into scientific explanation, but if you're in that state where your parasympathetic nervous system is heightened, so that means you all the natural processes are going on and all of the kind of fight and flight processes are really quieted down, it is much easier to quiet yourself again if you have a negative cognition or a negative thought that comes up or a negative emotion that comes up. There are other techniques to, you know, to do. One can just think of a train going by and put the thoughts on the train, or a river going by and put the thoughts in the river like the fish swimming by. So there are little tricks to do regarding those thoughts if one really can't, if one's really disturbed by them. But I think the point is to not be so disturbed by them and to love yourself no matter what, because this is, as I said, this is what the mind does. So let it do its thinking, but you don't have to be so involved in it.
So if my listeners want to connect with you, learn more about your work, get your book, how can they do that?
Okay, my book is available on Amazon, on BarnesandNoble.com, the publisher, BalboaPress.com. It's available as paperback, Kindle, Nook, probably some other things I don't even know about. I have a blog which feeds into my website, so I'm going to give you the blog address, which
okay.
is Dr. Irene Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, dot Authors Express, that's Authors, X-P-R-E-S-S, dot com. I'm on Facebook. I have two pages, Soul Journey to Love and Doctor, that's Dr. Irene Cohen. And I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Dr. Dr. Irene Cohen. So I'm tweeting and Facebooking and blogging. And I usually do, a couple of times a week, I do a thought for the day, which is sometimes a little phrase from the book or something else that comes to me. I'll do a longer blog post every week or two on some subject. And those feed into my Facebook pages and Twitter and the Amazon Author Central page as well.
Great. Irene, thanks for being a guest today on Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you so much for having me, Jerry.
Next week, my guest is going to be Nani Crystal. Nani is a graduate of the School of Engineering at Tulane University. She spent 17 years doing information technology consulting. Half of the time was spent in pharmaceutical-based medicine with Fortune 50 companies, IBM, Johnson & Johnson, Nestle. Her passion, though, for the truth led her to start to research non-mainstream sciences. She's got an upcoming book on creation mechanics and what are called scalar waves. She's an independent medical researcher, and she's really been exploring holistic, complementary, and conventional medicine. And we're going to be talking to her about iodine, radiation poisoning, what can you do to bring that thyroid function back. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you, or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.